Explaining the results of an Israeli election, especially just hours or days, though sometimes even weeks or months after polls close, is never a straightforward task. Still, it's not like we don't get plenty of opportunities to practice. This week's general election was Israel's fourth within the last 2 years. This upheaval has been unusual in the history of Israel. Despite the fact that no single party has ever held a majority in the Knesset, the coalition's Israeli governments have been obliged to assemble, while often riotously diverse, usually hold more or less together for most of a parliamentary term. But this upheaval has also been pretty weird in the history of upheaval. Israel's recent spate of elections has not been the result of, or resulted in, any game of musical chairs in the Prime Minister's office. One person has remained in charge throughout, Israel's longest-serving leader, Benjamin Netanyahu. And that stability, if you can stand another paradox, is very arguably the reason for this chaos, in as much as it's perfectly arguable that all four of these recent elections have been referendums on Benjamin Netanyahu. As we go to air, it would appear that Israelis still can't quite make up their minds. Netanyahu's party, Likud, seems certain to win more seats than anyone else in the new parliament, but they will be, as usual and as expected, a long way short of a majority. On current numbers, however, Likud plus their likeliest coalition partners are a short way short of a majority.
We're stuck. It's unfortunate, but we're completely stuck. There are really only three options on the table. The first option is that I would say if Gideon Saar probably would come to his senses and join the right-wing bloc, come back to us, in which case we have a clear majority, whatever the final results will be.
Before we get over-invested in the question of where it all went wrong for Netanyahu, it is far from clear that it has all gone wrong for Netanyahu, and history demonstrates that betting against him is an infuriatingly reckless investment. It may just be that he is not easily daunted, and he was, as a younger man, a special forces commando. It is also the case that he is one of a coterie of contemporary politicians, along with Donald Trump, Silvio Berlusconi, and Boris Johnson, who understand that total shamelessness is kind of a superpower. Netanyahu has, after all, managed to remain Prime Minister while not merely being under investigation on corruption charges, but actually on trial, and in a country which takes this sort of thing commendably seriously. In 2014, one former Israeli Prime Minister, Ehud Olmert, was convicted and imprisoned over something similar. But Netanyahu did have a fresh and not unimpressive case to make in this latest campaign. At home, Israel has led the world, and by miles, in rolling out a COVID-19 vaccine.
I heard an interview from the CEO of Pfizer the other day, and he was saying how Mr. Netanyahu was the head of state who badgered him the most, and who called him at 3 o'clock in the morning.
Abroad, Netanyahu could boast genuine diplomatic triumphs. The establishment of normal relations with the United Arab Emirates, Bahrain, Morocco, and Sudan, and the agreements of a few countries, most notably the United States, to move their Israeli embassies from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem. So he's not done yet, and if he is, he's unlikely to admit it quickly enough to render this explainer redundant. It does seem the case that more Israelis voted for broadly right-wing parties, Likud among them, than did not. So Netanyahu may try to persuade into government the Yamina party of Naftali Bennett, Netanyahu's former ally and more recent rival, and the New Hope party of Gideon Saar, Netanyahu's former ally and more recent rival. Welcome to Israeli politics. That, along with the support of the conservative and or religious and or frankly cranky parties usually willing to go along with Likud, may get Netanyahu yet another term.
There's no reason why we should go to a fifth election. And they must come to Netanyahu and say, we want to be part of the government, we accept the results of this round, and form a right-of-center government that could aggressively pursue the opportunities we have ahead of us.
The clue in the name, Religious Zionism Party, many of whose views on social progress haven't evolved much these last several dozen centuries or so, seem to have done depressingly well. Plus, the path to power looks even trickier for those who think it's time someone else had a crack at being prime minister.
I've started speaking to party leaders and we'll wait for the results, but we'll do everything to create a sane government in Israel.
Yair Lapid, leader of the centrist opposition party Yesh Atid, would probably need to build a seven-party coalition, somehow embracing the spectrum from the hawkish nationalists of Yisrael Beitenu and some of the parties representing Israel's Arab citizens. That's a broad church, even by local standards. Another grimly amusing prospect is the one of the role of ultimate kingmaker falling to Mansour Abbas, leader of the vaguely Islamist Israeli Arab Ram Party, who seem to have won four seats. Abbas has indicated a willingness to work with Netanyahu, but he may just be exercising a wry sense of humour. Israel appears to have arrived at one of those peculiar passes at which any number of things are possible, while none seem that likely. It could save everyone a lot of time if the polling stations are left where they are. Israelis may be visiting them again soon. For Monocle 24, I'm Andrew Miller.